1, 2, 3.
Redbeard here with part one of the essential Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble.
My sweet little thing, she my pride and joy. She my sweet little baby, I'm my little lover boy. That's a close up, baby.
Yeah, Stevie, in playing with him, there was a thing about him that was very, very simple. It was like, if it felt good, then it was good. It was a very Trust Your Instincts band. Spontaneous. Didn't matter if there was some little minor performance mistakes. If the spirit was there and there was fire and the feeling was good, then it was happening.
You can't change it. Can't rearrange it.
Hi, this is Thomas Shannon.
And I'm Chris Layton. In the studio for the best of Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble, part one.
Career struggle, tremendous early success, crushing despair and near death, recovery, redemption, and tragedy. All of these are components in the saga of Texas modern blues musician Stevie Ray Vaughan. But through it all, the thing that survives and speaks best for him is his recorded musical legacy. Stevie Vaughan grew up with his big brother Jimmy in the Oak Cliff section of Dallas, Texas. Stevie idolized his older brother's way with an electric guitar, and Stevie dropped out of high school to follow Jimmy south to Austin. It was there that Stevie Vaughan actually could see in person many of the blues masters whose records he had played endlessly on his big brother's record player as a kid. These original blues men had discovered an enthusiastic club owner in Austin's Clifford Antone, and in the mixture of native Texas and imported university students, an audience that appreciated authentic blues. It was the perfect situation for the teenage Stevie Vaughan to apply for an apprenticeship. He was paying dues by playing the blues nightly. And nobody bothered to check his ID at the door for legal age. Stevie Vaughan's guitar playing ability, even as an adolescent, was an all-access pass that would never be revoked until the day he died. Double Trouble drummer Chris Layton still remembers vividly the very first time he heard Stevie Ray Vaughan's guitar. It's the sound that would forever change Chris Layton's life.
First time I heard Stevie play, and I didn't meet him that night, but the first time I heard him play was at a place called Soap Creek Saloon in Austin, Texas. Drove up, got out of my car, and I could hear the band playing, but I heard this piercing guitar as if it was like outside and not even coming from inside. It was like drilling like right through the walls of the building. And I thought, wow, who is this guy? And It was Stevie. He was playing. I thought, he's remarkable. It was just, he was.
We'll be right back.
double trouble bass player Tommy Shannon, who had made entree into the big time with Texas blues rocker Johnny Winter way back in 1970, Tommy finds it coincidental where he later discovered an adolescent Stevie Vaughan.
It's really kind of ironic the way I met him. Before I met him, I was playing with Johnny Winter, and we broke up, and I flew back to Dallas, and this club called The Fog was our old hangout. That's where I met Johnny Winter. And I went in one night, and Stevie was playing. He's about 14, 15 years old. And there was all these big people around him, you know, and he just looked up to them. And a lot of them kind of treated him like a pest, you know. Later on, he said he remembered I was the only one that was nice to him. But he was incredible. I mean, I knew, even though he was just a little kid, that he had a special gift. I knew that.
Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble's big break came with a chance booking without any record contract at the prestigious Montreux Jazz Festival at Lake Geneva, Switzerland in 1982. Audience members David Bowie and Jackson Browne were so impressed that Bowie hired Vaughan as featured guitarist for Bowie's 1983 hit album Let's Dance, while Jackson Browne invited Double Trouble to use Jackson's recording studio. Tommy Shannon and Chris Layton recall their humble beginnings with Stevie Ray Vaughan in the studio.
We went to L.A. and we had 3 days, right?
Yeah, as it turned out is really what it kind of amounted to.
Yeah, and when it, like, the second day we did 2 songs, and the last day we did 8.
What we did was we actually mounted like what was like a 2-week tour, with that being the objective, to do shows and make a little bit of money and end up in L.A. and be able to record. But Jackson gave us the studio time. In fact, Texas Flood is actually recorded on like pre-production recordings of Lawyers in Love. Over the top, it was used tape. So he threw that in too. I guess if you look deep enough, you'll find Lawyers in Love underneath Texas Flood.
Subliminal.
that I'm a little lover boy.
From Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble's debut Texas Flood in spring 1983, that's Pride and Joy. Their music, earthy and soulful, was in stark contrast to the highly synthesized, keyboard-heavy, modern chart toppers then, such as the Eurythmics, the Cars, the Police, Men at Work. Between the Texas Flood debut album and the high-profile guitar solos on David Bowie's Let's Dance album, Stevie Vaughan's guitar prowess was a calling card that preceded him. Here's legendary blues guitarist, singer, songwriter Buddy Guy.
Well, first of all, when you're a guitar player, those things come to you. We're almost like prize fighters, you know. You hear about this whatever weight division you're in, you hear about this guy coming before you get to him, you know. Yeah, I heard about him with the Davy Boy, and naturally, you know, I had been going down into Austin around Antone's, and that's why he went in there and started making his noise at first, I think. And his brother finally told me, Jimmy Vaughan, that he would let him use all the records that he would play, but he was hiding the ones on me from him. And when we used to laugh about it before he passed away. He used to tell me, say, something funny. Say, brother, every time I listen in the room, I hear something you're not giving me. And he had to steal the record of mine. And that's how he got a hold of my licks from the album. With all your tricks and charms.
Buddy Guy felt that young Stevie Vaughan soaked up all of the blues masters that Stevie heard like a sponge.
Well, I got to know him as one of my best friends before he passed away, and he was so much like myself when it come to that. There wasn't anybody he didn't pick up on. You know, you could hear Otis Rush in him, you could hear a B.B. King on him, you could hear Elmore James on him, and he just went, and that's what makes a good guitar player, a good horn player, whatever. You know, you get them all, and you put them together. I guess that's why gumbo tastes so good, because you put everything in it.
C. Clark's Cold Shot on the 1984 second album from Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble, that's Couldn't Stand the Weather. Up next, my first interview with Stevie while his star ascended rapidly, but storm clouds were developing on the horizon. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, you're in the studio for part one of the essential Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble. I'm Redbeard. In July 1984, I interviewed Stevie in his hometown, Dallas, Texas, for the first of several subsequent interviews. When I informed him that in Dallas-Fort Worth, their second album, Couldn't Stand the Weather, had knocked Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA out of the number one seller slot there, this was Stevie Vaughn's response to me in the studio.
Maybe we'll get some of these other musicians around Texas to a chance to come out and be listened to.
That's a very good idea. You know, I was talking with somebody about that today. There's a lot of talent in this town and in this area, don't you think?
In this state, there's an incredible amount of great talent that just hadn't got the chance to be listened to yet because they're not mainstream music. But that won't last long.
Okay, you brought up a good point. Why are you the exception? Why do you think that you and your band Double Trouble are having such tremendous success?
Well, several bands opened doors for us.
Mm.
Mr. John Hammond opened some doors for us.
Now, tell people about John. The average people on the street don't know of John personally, but his effect on modern day music is legendary.
Well, he started off putting out records by people like Billie Holiday, Bessie Smith, Duke Ellington.
He was with Columbia Records for what, like 30 or 35 or 40 years? He made that label, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He really did. He's been recording great music for at least 50 to 60 years. 50 years anyway. He's caused us to be able to listen to rhythm and blues or soul music.
Right.
Just as a rule, it's because of him.
Right. He was very instrumental with the careers of people like Bob Dylan,
sure,
getting them on Columbia Records. And
Aretha Franklin. Charlie Christian,
so
Bruce Springsteen.
Janis.
Yeah.
Yeah, Springsteen. This is the man you were talking about, John Hammond Sr. Now, how did your talents come to the attention of John Hammond?
Well, The main part of it actually came around when we played the Montreux Jazz Festival. His son played there too.
Yeah.
John Paul.
Who has done great acoustic blues for years.
He's a great man and a great player.
He is a good picker.
And he brought a tape back to his father. And it just kept his dad's interest. You know, we'd already sent him a tape from a broadcast live out of Austin.
Mm-hmm.
That was a couple of years prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it just kept his interest, you know. And we'd been trying to contact him. He'd been trying to get with us. We finally got a deal that made sense.
So
we went for it.
So this is John Hammond Sr. He really was very instrumental in getting you the major label deal, right?
Sure.
Yeah. You've got to swallow hard for a second when you decide to go cover certain classic songs. And you stepped out and decided to cover music that some people feel is just like untouchable, that it just could never be covered. Guys like some guy named Randy Hansen tried it for a while, and then there's been the Frank Marinos and Mahogany Rushes. But you're the only one that I know that has covered a Hendrix tune and has had Hendrix fans say, now that is killer. You did it. You pulled it off. Did you even think twice about it?
All I did was do the same thing that I figure he did with all the music that he listened to, which is take all the things that were exciting about that music and try to feel them and put them out again.
So,
you know, it's
this really comes from the soul.
Yeah.
On the Voodoo Child.
Sure. I mean, if you don't put that part into a Hendrix song or Albert Collins song or Albert King song or B.B. King song or whoever's song it is, if you don't put your soul into it, you're messing around, not doing anything.
It's a very, very integral part of your music and any real true blues or rhythm and blues, isn't it? Is the soul of the music.
Well, that's what it's for.
It's the whole thing. It's almost like you can't see notes flying through the air, but with blues music or rhythm and blues music, you can almost see them, can't you, coming off that guitar?
You see them sometimes.
You see
them. Thank you.
Like a lot of other guitar players, first he was kind of fascinated by all the original type things that Hendrix did that hadn't really ever been done before. Plus, he loved the way Hendrix sang, too. I think he was also fascinated, honestly, by the fact that the kind of music that he had done and how many people it had reached around the world being done by somebody who was black. Even though you tried to see things colorless, it was like thought that was really cool that Hendrix had achieved this artistic notoriety and commercial success, and not commercial, just monetary success and overall success, like a lot of other people that he always really idolized, never quite got to. And Hendrix had, and that was great.
Yeah, one thing also, Stevie's the only guitar player I've ever heard that can do Hendrix, you know. I've never heard anybody else that could do justice to it. And I don't know, to me it just seems like a part of Jimi Hendrix's spirit was in Stevie.
Mountain.
Considered rock blasphemy and career suicide prior to its appearance on 1984's Couldn't Stand the Weather, their second album, that's Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble covering Jimi Hendrix on Voodoo Child. This is Redbeard in the studio thanking all my guests. Don't miss part two at the same day and time next week. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter, @RedbeardRocks, and online at inthestudio.net.